ஈஸ்வர பிரணிதானம் பதஞ்சலி சேஸ். வாட் எவர் யூ டூ ஆஃபர் இட் டு காட். காட் கேவ் யூ தி எனர்ஜி, காட் கேவ் யூ தி இன்டெலிஜென்ஸ், காட் கேவ் யூ தி ஆப்பர்ச்சுனிட்டி டு டூ, யூ ஆர் டூயிங் இட். வை ஷுட் யூ கெட் எனி ரிவார்ட் ஃபார் தட்? Leave it to God. If you still want a thanks, you thank God for having given you the opportunity. God, thank you for giving me this opportunity. I am happy in having done this. You don't have to expect anything in return. Unfortunately, 99.99% of the humanity gets miserable because of this expectation. I want something for me. I want something. I have done this. I must get it. I am rightful owner of this. It's unfortunate. It's not only in the business, even in friendly relationship, even in marital relationship. The husband will look at the wife and say, honey, I love you. I don't know whether you in UK often do this. You are a little reserved people. You don't do that much. But in America, it is a must. Every day, at least 100 times, the husband should look at the wife and say, honey, I love you. And then the honey should return, darling, I love you too. You reaffirm it. Renewal. And that's what we call love. What does it mean? This guy says, honey, I love you, and then he'll keep on looking at her face. You know why? She should look at, darling, I love you too. Suppose she didn't do that. Huh? He will emphasize, honey, I love you, honey. Still no answer. He'll put his hand on her shoulder and say, shake, honey, what's the matter? Don't you love me? Is it common here also? Huh? Sort of, huh? And suppose, she looks around and says, I hate you. Will you be still sitting there and loving her? Immediately you will look into the yellow page looking for an attorney's address. I can't live with this girl anymore. I want to have a divorce. What does that mean? He simply says, honey, I give you my love, and in return, you should give your love to me. If you don't give your love, I won't give my love to you. Right? So he is giving to get. When he gives something to get something in return, it's not love. Even in the name of that beautiful word, love, we do business. Now, for argument, I say, don't you think you are entitled? You give something, don't you think you should get something in return? You deserve it. But why should the scripture say so? Don't look for anything in return. The reason is, the scripture says something higher reward to you. It's thinking of your permanent joy, permanent peace. It wants you to retain your eternal peace, your inborn natural peace. That's why it says, no, this is only temporary. If that guy gives you something in return and if you are going to be happy, then you want to be more happy, you want more people to give you. That means you depend on others for your happiness. No, it's impossible. Look at the world, more so in this age, in our very eyes, in front of our very eyes. How many rich, rich people have lost everything and walked out? They were depending on their millions and billions, on their regime, on their position. Look what happened to Shah of Iran. He couldn't even have a settled place to lay his head. Look what's happening to Marcos. These are all truths. We learn from those examples. We don't have to go and read books. Look at the president of the Haiti. Everybody says, I don't want you, I don't want you. What good of those riches? What good of this power? These are all proofs that man cannot be happy just with power, position, money, wealth. Even if you don't lose things, you are not happy always with one thing. You have something you've gotten, you are happy, but immediately the next thing is the fear. Suppose I lose it? You wanted it, you got it. You are happy. Oh, I got it. Immediately what follows? Oh, I don't want to lose it. The fear of losing comes. When are you keeping your balance? At what point the mind is peaceful? No. When you get, you are excited. When you lose, you are depressed. When you don't even lose, you are afraid of losing. That is what the scriptures say. Serenity of mind is there always. We disturb it by running after things, by wanting this and that and that and that, thinking that we'll be happy by that. That's what you call ignorance, they say. Aviveka, avidya. Patanjali says, klishtas, lot of disturbances in the mind, a list of klishtas he calls it, in the first chapter. Then he gives in one sutra, avidya kshetram uttaresham. Avidya, ignorance, is the root for all these problems. In one small line, he writes it out. Any time we are disturbed, no matter what kind of disturbance it is, even mere anxiety, sit back, think, why am I like this? What caused this anxiety? What caused this fear? What's the cause of my anger? What is the cause of my depression? What is the cause of my disappointment? What did I do? Underline that. What did I do to cause this? Don't immediately say, what did he do? It's easy to put the blame on somebody. Every time you say, I am disappointed, you will immediately point your finger. That guy, it's because of him I am in this situation. I am disappointed. It's easy to point one finger at somebody. But remember, when you point one finger at somebody, three fingers are pointing at you. Forget not that. You should be thrice blamed. He became only an excuse, a cause. So question yourself, what did I do? You will clearly come to the conclusion that yes, I wanted this. I made it an appointment. It is my appointment got dissed. When your appointment get dissed, you call it your disappointment. Disappointment is nothing but your appointment got dissed. So my slogan is, no appointment and no disappointment. Of course, it is impossible not to have appointment, not to make appointments. Even this morning, I made an appointment to be here at 9:30. How can I come here, sit here and say, don't make appointments? So, you can make appointments. But such appointment that will never give you disappointment. And what kind of that appointment is that? Appointments not based on your personal interest. Selfish reason. Or in simple words, any selfish act that you are doing to get something for you. I must get something. That certainly would cause anxiety, worry, fear, or disturb your mind. Instead, appointments for others' behalf. I have been given an opportunity, asked to come, I am here. If they want me, I offer them what I have. Even after offering, I don't insist that they should understand me. If they understand, it's fine. If not, wonderful. Because it's neither my gain nor my loss. I have done my job. And if I haven't done good justice to you, you have come and staying here for all the 3 days, expecting the chief guest to give you something really great, useful to you, and if you don't get anything much, don't blame me. Blame Ken. Always at ease. You are just what you are. You don't have to force yourself to be something different. You are happy as you are. God made you this way, fine, that's the way it should be. Be contented. Let things happen through your life. Let God use you as His instrument. God is there always as your own conscience. God is not somewhere else standing, sitting there and pulling ropes. No. Antaratma, calls Mahatma Gandhi, the inner soul, inner self. Listen to that. And that's what you call meditation. You simply sit there, God, what are you telling me? Listen to your inner voice. But there again, some problem arises. There's not always one voice from within. One says, do it. Other say, no, forget it. Which one to follow? That is another big problem. Which is God's voice and which is devil's voice? The sura asura, they call it. That kind of fight is always there within. That's what you call the Bhagavad Gita's fight, Kurukshetra Yuddha. The good cousins and the bad cousins fighting with each other. And unfortunately, there are more bad cousins and only few good cousins. It's all, it has its own allegorical meaning. This is our Kurukshetra, this is our war field. We don't have to go for war somewhere else. It's right here. Our good sense and the desirous lower mind, the other cousins, their cousins, born from the same family. One will say, no, that is somebody's property, you should not touch it. And, nobody is here. It's God given. See, even that will bring a beautiful argument. See, you thought yesterday, last night, you thought you wanted something like that, a wallet. Huh? And you see, God is presenting you this. Take it. The bad cousins have always good arguments. But your good cousin, the beautiful voice inside, the God's voice will always say, no matter what it is, it's not yours. Don't touch it. So which one to follow? If we are weak, we just follow the other cousins. Take it. And then go through all the misery. That's what we are supposed to be learning by meditation. We sit and learn which is God's voice and which is my ego's voice. Now, having said that, I'll give you a clue how to even define that. Because it's very hard to decide which one is which. Because it's all, both are witches. Even among witches, there's bad witch and good witch, no? So. One little clue is, God's voice is always free from any selfishness. God's voice will help you to do things that is good for everybody. Nobody will get hurt by your action. And at least somebody will get the benefit. That's a beautiful book of ethics in South India, written in Tamil. It's next to Bhagavad Gita, translated in many, many languages. G.U. Pope of the West, he translated that. It's called Thirukkural. Beautiful work. And there, the author, Thiruvalluvar, says, what is a perfect act? It's not just the act by itself. The result of the act. He even talks about falsehood, telling a lie. Poimayam vaimayidatta purai thirnda nanmai payakkumenin. Even a lie will be taken as truth. If it hurts nobody and brings at least some benefit to somebody, is an important saying. It will help you. Keep it as your important quote, one of the many quotes. Even a lie is taken as truth. If it doesn't hurt anybody, puraidhirnda nanmai, no harm to anybody, at least some benefit to somebody. If there is no benefit, it's a waste. So it should not hurt anybody, but at least bring some benefit to somebody. It doesn't matter whether you or somebody else, doesn't matter. Such an act is taken as a yogic act, a perfect act. It doesn't matter what it is. Telling lies, killing life, doesn't matter. The ultimate aim and the result is to be counted upon, not the act alone. If you simply decide by seeing the act, two fellows come with surgical knife and both use the surgical knife on other persons. One, you file case against him in the police because he is an ordinary fellow. The other one, you reward with money because he's a doctor. Right? Both are human beings, both use the same surgical knife, but here for the doctor you pay for the act, whereas the other fellow you take him to the police. Act is the same. Right? So it's not the act that counts. Why is he doing that? The motive and the result. Every act should be counted in these terms. That is what karma yoga. So if you sit back and analyze, you can really come to that correct understanding. Which one is which? And then he should have the strength, the will to follow the right. That is another matter. Knowing which is one, and even after knowing, following that. Because there is a saying, no? The spirit is willing, but the flesh. See, it's all practical. People experience this in their life. So how am I to follow the spirit? How can I develop the will not to get caught in the flesh? That's where you practice Hatha Yoga, meditation, slowly gaining mastery over your body, or your vital energy, the prana, over your mind. If I could again summarize the purpose behind all the yoga practices, particularly the yoga that we normally practice as asana, pranayama, meditation, it is to ultimately develop that will to gain mastery over every cell of your body. You can command your cells, you can command your organs of the body, you can command your senses. If you say, I see it, yes sir, I am seeing. If you say, tongue salivate, yes sir, I am salivating. If you say, no, that's not for you, Not even a drop of saliva should come. However delicious it is, all right, I am dry. That reminds me of a great sage by name Sugar. It's not English sugar. He was tested by his master that he is fit to listen to the highest truth. Is he a good seeker? Has he had that command and control over his body and mind? And the test was, he said, come on, protrude your tongue. Swallow all the saliva, keep it dry and protrude it. And said, yes. He took a teaspoon full of sugar, put it there. Walk around my palace, come back and bend forward. All the particles of sugar should fall back into the spoon, not even one to stick on your tongue. What a test, huh? How many of us are ready to do that? And it is possible. It is possible because it's in your control. If you only know how to exercise that. Not even a cell will move without your will. But if you are weak, they will move you. Even modern medicine is coming to know that, realize that. They say most of the diseases are psychosomatic. Produced by the mind and could be cured by the mind. Mind is the key. Mind you. So let's probably right at this part. I won't remind you anymore. We'll stop it because already I think the lunch hour or coffee break is salivating many. Thank you so much. You are really wonderful to sit and watch and get inspired. Remember, it's you are the people who are making me talk. I am equally happy in sitting in front of you and sharing these words, because I also get all this information because of you. If not, why should I sit and think of all these things? I don't think. So, I frankly say that I am neither a thinker, nor a writer, nor a speaker. No. I don't write, I don't read, I don't speak. I don't even think. It just happens. It's fine. Often when I answer questions, while others wonder, oh, what a beautiful answer, I myself say, hey, how did I get it? All these years, I have passed 70 and more. And that unseen force has handled me and continued up till now. And I am sure that he will still do as long as he wants. But I thank you for giving me this opportunity. Oh, sure.